Yeah. So speaking this morning on the term gospel, which definitely is Christianese, this is maybe the first installment, and there's going to be a workshop this afternoon.
Yep.
So it's kind of one long continuous thing. So I'm going to stop at somewhere between 35 minutes from now. That's a target. And then we'll pick up this afternoon, 4 o'clock. Is that okay?
Yes.
Three of you have said it was okay, so that's enough. That's all I need. So, pardon?
A little encouragement.
Yeah, a little. I don't need much. Just a little bit, and I take it a long way. So, next slide. I have the clicker. Do I point back there? No. We don't know where I point. Yeah, okay, so what do we mean by gospel? So the word gospel comes from the Greek euangelion, which means good news. So here's good news. We have some chili. That's good news. Now, I've heard those words many times in my life, and that's good news. But one time I heard those words after I was in junior high. I'd been backpacking with some a friend's family, and we really didn't know much about backpacking yet, and we had not properly hung our food, and the bears came and raided our food, and we hadn't eaten any food in about a day and a half. So when I heard the words, "Here's your chili," that was really good news. Because there's all kinds of good news. I mean, good news, like here's another $20. Well, you've already got more money than you need. Gospel isn't just good news generically. Gospel is good news like, here is a remarkable change of fortune. You've been attacked, you've been beat down, you're wiped out, and suddenly the good news is all that gets turned around completely. I heard really good news in high school in Algebra 2. I didn't understand anything in math in high school past geometry. So Algebra 2, trigonometry, I had no idea what was going on. After roll the first day, I had no idea what was going on for the whole year. And the final exam came, and there was a multiple choice part, and then the part you had to actually work out the problems. And divine intervention, The teacher said, we don't have time to do the problem, so just do the multiple choice, where I had a 1 in 4 chance of getting them right. So that was really good news. So gospel isn't just good news. It's good news that radically changes the situation in which you find yourself. So in the ancient world, good news was most often of a political or community interest in nature. And it was connected to the word savior, someone who saved us from an enemy. So if your city's being attacked, and in those days, right, there'd be a siege. And the whole idea was you'd starve people out until there was no food left, no water. So good news is if someone came and broke that siege, that's really good news. The results of the Battle of Marathon in 490, when there were hundreds of thousands of Persians were attacking Greece, and something like 12,000 Athenians met them on the beach, and they, craziness of all craziness, they won. And some guy named Phidippides ran 26.2 miles back from the battlefield back to Athens to give good news. Because they no way they thought they would win. Then he died. That was bad news for him. But it was good news. I mean, who would have thought they would win? I mean, that's just crazy. Shouldn't have happened. There's also an Old Testament background. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of them who bring good news, who proclaim peace. Right? I mean, peace. You know, the Hebrew word peace, the word shalom, means more than just the absence of tension. It means what it takes for good to happen, good to grow. You know, the absence of tension is when you you get to church and you open the doors in the parking lot, and now it appears that everything's fine in your family. Right? That's not the same thing as peace. Right? Sometimes there's some energy going on the way to church. So, but peace is shalom. That's what it takes for good to grow. Who bring good tidings, who proclaim salvation, to be saved, or redemption. So our word redemption, like we use that for, monetary, like redeem a coupon. Here we've got my aerosol whipping cream coupon. That's what I wish I had more of. And so you give the coupon and they give you the product. We call that redemption. Well, redemption in the ancient world, its original context of meaning is redemption from slavery. That was a verb that was almost exclusively reserved for if you are purchased out of slavery. Didn't have anything to do with coupons. Well, if you are a slave and someone buys you out of slavery, that's redemption. To be removed from slavery, that's good news. That's just not an extra helping of chili. That's good news. Who say to Zion, your God reigns. So in an era where the Jews were being beat up marvelously by all kinds of neighbors, to be reminded, yeah, our God is actually in control. And we need to maybe adjust our vision, how we see, to be more in line with how God understands things. So good news. Let us remember that God reigns. It sure doesn't look like that sometimes. Our present condition sometimes can be not so great at all. But I turned 60 a couple of months ago. I guess it's more than a couple now. I'm actually closer to 61. Oh, man, it's a bummer. I'm old enough now to have a couple of instances in my life where what I thought was a good situation actually wasn't so hot. And what looked like it wasn't such a great thing coming turns out to be exactly what I needed. So that's good news. Or in the Roman world, the reign of Augustus is the beginning of good news. So Augustus used to be Octavian. You may remember this from like Spartacus or movies like that. The last 100 years of the Roman Republic, from 100 BC to about the year 30 or so BC, it was sort of like a real life demonstration of a worldwide wrestling federation event, where there were just mighty generals one after the other that were more powerful than the government, that had armies that were loyal to them, not to the Roman state, and they went around beating each other up and conquering all kinds of people, and the last guy standing was Augustus. And so he had Virgil write poems about him. He was like Virgil, the famous poet, was his PR guy. And he wrote this beautiful poem about how Augustus has brought peace, good news, because he's the last one standing. There ain't no other general left. So, and that is the transition from the Roman Republic to the Roman Empire. So that's good news, a change. So it's a change in circumstance, change from you're saved from something bad to something good. So it's not just more good. It's say, if it's good news, it's bad to good. Saved from or saved for dynamic, that's also a feature of Jesus' teaching. By their fruit, you'll recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? God wants us to grow grapes. And we're growing, we're a thorn bush. Well, we could steal grapes and staple them to ourselves. But it's being transformed. Right? What do you see? By their fruit you will recognize them. Do you see anything there? What do you discern there? I have 25 minutes left, so I have plenty of time. What do you see?
Reflection of you're doing.
Okay, yeah. It's what you, there's a connection between what kind of plant you are and what you grow.
Reality.
So what do you mean by reality?
Figs don't grow on bad trees.
That's true. That's just, yeah, that's right. That, yeah, that's actually really true. Like, wow, that's kind of sobering. Like, the reality is, what are you, you know, what are you producing? That's a nasty look in the mirror, maybe. What else do you notice? Everyone's got fruit. I mean, thornbush fruit may not be really good, you know. I don't know what kind of, I mean, I don't recall seeing, like, thornbush in the vegetable aisle at Raley's. So we're saved from bad tree-ness and saved for, so the gospel is, right, it's from bad to good, and we are saved from bad tree-ness or thornbushness to good tree-ness. And Jesus gives it even more texture. A student is not above his teacher. It is enough if a student becomes like his teacher. So parallel sayings, another one in Luke. A student is not above his teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like his teacher. Now we all had favorite teachers, right? Mrs. Douglas was my second grade teacher. I was totally in love with Mrs. Douglas. But I never wanted to be like her. And we've had a lot of favorite teachers. But look what Jesus says. A teacher, a student who is fully trained becomes like his teacher. So this is the dynamic of, it's by your fruit you will know them. The character that's formed in you is what produces the fruit. So learning from Jesus isn't just learning stuff for a test or learning certain phrases, but it is learning a pattern of life. It's about head and heart and hands. So this is tied to this notion of agency in the New Testament. Remember in John's Gospel, Jesus in particular is the agent, right? I do only what I see the Father doing. Now, we hire an agent today. We hire someone who's an expert. So a real estate agent, because they're an expert in local real estate values, etc. Their idea was the highest form of agent is the person who would make the same decision you would make if you were there. That's a completely different understanding. So you want to hire an agent who actually knows you so well. So what Jesus is here saying is, wow, to be like me, meaning you need to put yourself in the school of me-ness and become like me. Not just do the things I do, but have that awareness of God the Father in you so richly and deeply. So that's good news, is we can go from not having that to having that. Does that make sense? I think that's pretty darn good news. Okay, one person liked that. That was good. That's all I need, just one person. So love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and with all your mind and strength. That's the whole package. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, these are related to these other terms. So this idea of gospel, good news, and the good news is the transformation of you. That's related to a couple other terms. Apostle in the New Testament. That word apostolos means sent one. So there are only a few people who are apostles. But the word disciple, mathetes, means learner. So anybody can be a disciple if they decide to put themselves in the school of Jesus and go through that good news process of being transformed. So I've summarized the great New Testament scholar G.B. Caird, his notion of what it means to be in the school of Jesus. He wrote, this is the last thing he wrote before he died. To follow Jesus or to follow his example turns out to be, as popular tradition has held, the higher road, that particular morality which the gospel imposes upon the Christian. But such morality does not consist in learning from Jesus any stereotype pattern. It's not just following by rote. Such morality does not consist in learning from Jesus any stereotype pattern, but consists rather in learning from Jesus attitudes of heart and of mind, which are openness to the will of God and the presence of God, which is the only authority. A constant submission of personal interest to the pursuit of that will, that is God's will, in the well-being of others, and a confidence that no matter what the immediate circumstances may appear to be, the outcome can safely be left in God's hands. That's the last thing he wrote before he died. He didn't die like right then. He had dinner and then he died. But but I've summarized that as discipleship is learning from Jesus patterns of heart, patterns of thought, patterns of action. And he says, right, I teach him parables so that they may be ever seeing but never perceiving, and ever hearing but never understanding. That's a kind of curious thing to say. So I took this to heart, and when I was interviewed the first time to teach in the university, said, what's your philosophy of teaching? And I said, my goal is that my students are more confused when I'm done than when I started. I mean, you probably aren't going to get the job if you say that. But that seems like what Jesus is saying, right? And he says that because we human beings live life mostly on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard work to think deeply. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus says, you know what? I'm going to teach him parables because it's going to force you to think through the complexity, not just, the interplay of your mind, your heart, and your actions, your behaviors. So all that is good news. It's also kind of hard work, but it's also a lifetime job. It's not like it's a project like mowing the lawn or something. Then he called the crowd to him along with the disciples and said, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Does that sound like a really attractive invitation? Yeah, deny yourself, take up the cross. Like, yeah, how about like take up the whipping cream or something, you know? The magic shell. Right? Yeah, is that good stuff? Yeah. My senior year of college, where I had for breakfast every single day, ice cream and magic shell. That was all I... It was great. It was totally great. So perhaps Paul is a good guide for us on the initial steps of saved from. So I think you can see that the landscape of what I'm going to talk about today, the rest of this morning, about 15 minutes, and then this afternoon for 2 hours, is to go through what it means to be saved from and saved for, as individuals and as a community of faith. And I would posit that there might not be a single topic or area of thought and concentration for the Christian that's more important than this. What does Jesus mean to be saved from certain things and saved for certain things? It'd be a bummer if we find out we've left out two-thirds of what he means in this big, complicated, but very important topic. So Paul can be a good guy because Paul, of course, is the someone who thoroughly understood Jesus and came to be his communicator to the broader world. You know, Paul took the gospel from a rural Palestinian context and brought it into a Greco-Roman urban context. That is essentially what we have to do, to take the gospel from Jesus' teaching and bring it into a different context. So that Paul's already done that for us. He's shown how to do it and how to do it faithfully. So that's why it's important to not only study what Jesus says, but study what Paul says and how he demonstrates this faithful transition of the message from one context to another. So save from bad treeness to good treeness. And that's also being transformed. So the gospel, good news, and not just like more of the same, but it really is good news, radical change of fortune, is saved from and then saved for. So what are we saved from? In the gospel, in the New Testament, we are saved from, principally, four things, four forces. Sin, its penalty. And I think for most of us, when we hear gospel, if we haven't thought about it too deeply, that's the one that's primary. Yep, I'm forgiven from sin and its penalty. So I'm not going to hell, but instead I'm going to
heaven.
Yes. Not just a nice restaurant, but from hell to heaven. So that's one. That is true. That's a part of it. But it is not at all the whole of what Jesus means by gospel, or saved from and saved for. That's just one piece. There's also saved from sin, its power. We are saved from Satan and the powers. And the powers are, you know, the New Testament, Paul calls them the principalities and the powers. Those are angelic beings, what we sometimes call the fallen angels. You know, so there's this idea in the Bible that Satan has decided to run his own agenda inside of the corporation. And he enlists the help of some of the other underlings. And they are, they are like mutineers right on the ship. Does that make sense? And what has happened is, God gave to us human beings at creation, right? Genesis 1, 2, and 3, he says to Adam and Eve, I'm going to trust you with this earth. I'm trusting you. It's mine, but I'm going to give you control over it. When I was a sophomore in high school, I had just gotten my license. My parents went to Hawaii for 10 days and left me alone. My mom said to my dad, Paul, are you nuts? And he said, well, we're trusting him. And I heard him say that, which sort of blunted all my, right? I mean, like now I'm responsible. I heard him say that. I learned some lessons there, like you shouldn't wait until the very end to clean up. It took all day Saturday. It was just, what a bummer. But that's essentially what my parents trusting me. That's what God did. He trusted us. And what have we done? What we've done, human beings, we have foolishly made common cause with the forces of evil. That's why when the New Testament opens, Jesus says, if there's a strong man, if there's a robber who's broken into your house, you've got to bind the strong man. Satan says, I'm Lord of this world. And Jesus says, well, yeah, you are, because you're like a robber who's broken in. But I'm the owner, and I'm coming back to kick you out. Does that make sense? So we are under the control. We have foolishly put ourselves under the influence of Satan and the powers. And we can be free from that. And we can also be free from the power of this world. And the power of the way the world operates. And just as a preview, I think maybe 10, 12 years ago, I had to get a new phone, and I went to the Galleria, I think it was, right here in Roseville. And as I walked up to the Verizon counter, a young man with hair I did not understand looked at me, and before I said anything, he said, I know what you want. And he pulled out a phone. He said, this is a Razor or something. It's super, it's the fastest, it's faster than the Starship Enterprise. And I said, I don't want fast. He said, what do you mean you don't want fast? Of course you want fast. No, I want fast. And he leaned over and said, listen, not only do you want fast, you deserve it. I deserve it. And I said, you don't know anything about me. How could you possibly know what I deserve? And he said, listen, why don't you want fast? And I said, well, you know, the greatest minds in Western history have posited that it's just not good for human beings to get whatever we want as soon as we want it. And he said, what? So here's, that's a preview, but the big point is we live in a culture which says you deserve whatever you want as soon as you want it. Have you seen Amazon delivery trucks? Have they come to your house? They have come to mine. The world is training us that we deserve something we don't deserve, and that it is good for us to get whatever we want as soon as we want it. And that isn't true. Does that make sense? That's just one example. So these four areas where you're set, we can be set free. Right now we're under the, we are slaves to these four things. But we can be set free from them. But then we can also be set free for certain things that we're going to also talk about this afternoon. So, slaves to sin. We'll just get into this a little bit. Paul says in Galatians 3, the scripture declares that the whole world is a prisoner of sin. The penalty of sin, that's one. The power of sin, that's another. And then there's this Hebrew word there, the Yetzer Hara. So, that means the evil inclination. So, Paul has this in, of course, he's writing in Greek, but remember when he says, there's war in my members? That which I don't want to do, I end up doing. And that which I want to do, I don't do. He says, what it means to be human is that we have a desire to please God if we're believers. But we also have this crazy, selfish, curved in thing going on. Luther said we're curved in upon ourselves, incurvatus ad te. We're curved. That's a crazy idea, but it's really true. And so Paul says, right, that which I don't want to do, I watch myself doing it. And even while I'm doing it, I'm saying, don't do that, but I'm watching myself do it. And like, what is that? And that which I want to do, I don't do. Augustine said, how bizarre is this? If my mind tells my feet to go over here, they go over here. But if my mind tells myself not to do something, I end up doing it. So he said, and the Greeks had said, right, it's the mind that governs everything. Augustine said, no, it's not. It's the will. So we are under the control. The Yetzer Hara is that selfish or evil inclination. Do you have one? Do you have one? What's your name?
Joyce.
Joyce, you have one?
You want to hear it?
No. Well, I want to hear you. Yeah, but you do, right? Yeah. But so do I, right? What's your name?
Mark,
do you have one?
Yes.
Yeah, we all do. Only delusional people think they don't. We all do. We all have that thing within us that's broken, that's whacked out. We are all broken, and we cannot fix ourselves. And even that this word for sin, the Greek word for sin is harmartia. Sin means to miss the target. Like you're saying to yourself, here'd be the smart way to go, Dave. Go this way, Dave. And you're watching, Dave's watching Dave go that way instead. That's missing the target. Paul says, for as I have often told you before, and now say again with tears, many live as enemies of the cross of Christ. Their destiny is their destruction. Their God is their stomach. I mean, what could be more, what could be more direct than that? Their glory is their shame, and their mind is on earthly things. So the way it is, the world is certainly that way. Unbelievers are certainly that way. But just because we become Christians doesn't mean that automatically disappears. We've still got that thing in us. But we can be set free from it. That would be good news. That would be really good news. So that which I don't want to do, Paul says, I do. And that which I wish to do, I don't do. So Romans 7, so my brothers and sisters, you also died to the law through the body of Christ, that you might belong to another, him who was raised from the dead, in order that we might bear fruit for God. But for when we were in the realm of the flesh, so that's the other, somebody talks about the realm of the flesh. There's the realm of the flesh and the realm of the spirit that we live in at the same time, simultaneously. For when we were in the realm of the flesh, the sinful passions aroused by the law were at work in us. And part of what he's saying here there is, Boy, as soon as you know something's wrong, you kind of start to want to do it. So that we bore fruit for death. Now, that's kind of fruit a thorn bush bears. But now, by dying to what once bound us, we have been released from the law so that we serve in the new way of the Spirit, not in the old way of the written code. So this is also his image where he says in Galatians, well, you know, you've been set free. The prison, the cell door has been sprung open. Why are you still, why have you wandered out and then wandered back and sat down inside your cell again? Does that make sense? But we can be set free from this curved in stuff. We know that the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin. I don't understand what I do. For what I want to do, I don't do. And what I hate, I do. Isn't that true? You have that experience? What I hate, I do. I'm horrified by something I've just done or that I spent my time doing yesterday. As it is no longer I myself who do it, but it is sin living in me. So this sin thing, it's not in concert with my mind. It's not in concert with part of my will, but it's got hold of some other part of my will. For I desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. So this is the human condition. We can't on our own do the good. Spasmodically, sometimes we do good things, but on our own without Christ, that the evil inclination is always going to win. But we can be set free from that. Now, this isn't just the Bible that says this stuff. So Thucydides, a great Greek historian. We didn't invent this law. But we find it everywhere at work. The strong do what they want, and the weak just have to suck it up. So these are the Athenians who at the start of the Peloponnesian War, Pericles, their leader, said, "We're Athens. We stand for good and virtue and righteousness. The rest of the world looks to us as the schoolmasters." And then he died in the plague, and a year later, the Athenian generals are saying, "Look, we're just bigger than you. Do what we say, or we'll beat you up." Or Livy, the great Roman historian, he wrote the following about the time Jesus was maybe 15 years old. "In recent years, wealth has made us greedy. And self-indulgence has led us through every form of sensual excess. We know it's killing us, but we don't have the capacity to stop." Isn't that something? I think, boy, if I have enough, then I won't be so desirous anymore. But Livy says, no, what happens is the more you have, the more you want. That's powerful. That's why Augustine said, "Be careful what you love, because you become subject to the things you love. And subjects cannot judge." But also modern, so this is Stephen Carter, professor of law at Yale, grew up here in California, PhD Stanford. So I heard him say that quote, the two lines at the top are quote, I heard him say that in Chicago 25 years ago, but then I immediately thought it has no capacity to change your desire. Because Christina and I were married, I think, a year. We're driving across Nevada. We're on our way to Colorado. It was middle of the night, and the Nevada State Police pulled me over and said, "Mr. Nystrom, you cannot drive 100 miles an hour across Nevada." I wanted to. And I still want to. But the law won't let me. But the law has no capacity to change your desires. All law does, it tries to hem in and contain. Law is like a fence around a dog that's out of control. Law can't change the desire. Law can't change the character of that dog. Some of you may remember this name. So this is now, 25 years ago, 26 years ago. Doug Copeland was, when Generation X was the thing, he was the big name. And this is a book he wrote called Life After God. And he said, I was raised without God. I mean, my parents weren't anti-God. It was just God was irrelevant. And my parents moved us to the west coast of Canada and built the house cantilevered out over the Pacific Ocean, as if to say, we want to get as far away as possible, you know, from traditional values. And he said, yeah, but we were raised without, God just wasn't a factor. But the second to last page of this book, he says, and now I'm going to tell you a secret. And I hope you're in a quiet room and are paying attention, because I don't know if I'm going to have the courage to say it again. He said, I need God, because I am broken and I can't fix myself. I'm selfish. I want to be kind, but I can't stop being selfish. I want to be loving, but I'm really not. So this idea that we are, that Jesus puts forward, we're thorn bushes. That Paul puts forward, you know, we're under the control of this Yetzer Hara. I mean, that isn't just a Christian idea. That goes back to the greatest minds of the ancient world and then someone rather contemporary. So that's just a taste of what we're going to talk about then this afternoon from 4 to 6. Saved from certain things. Gospel is about being saved from certain things. Not just more of the same goop, like I already have all the steak I want. But wow, it's really important. We're saved from something that's killing us. And we're saved for something. And as I said, I think this is at the heart about what Jesus understands his ministry is about, and at the heart of what Paul understands and what he wants to communicate to believers.